Welcome to Double Take, critical, sometimes confrontational, always amusing conversations about movies. Double Take is a Cinema Classics production produced by John DeSando and Johnny DiLoretto. I'm Johnny DiLoretto.
I'm John DeSando.
This here is Double Take.
It is. Now, yeah, I sat in this movie, a horror movie,
yeah,
called Malignant.
Yeah.
So I need you to tell me, who is this guy, James Wan?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with this guy. I became slowly fascinated by him over the past year during the pandemic. I watched a lot of these movies, the Conjuring films.
Yes.
Insidious.
Yeah.
You know, he's also got a couple of non-horror movies under his belt. Aquaman and one of the Fast and Furious
Seven.
Movies. Okay, I haven't seen
Furious it. Seven.
But this is the guy that created the Saw franchise.
Oh, boy, forever.
And, you know, for years, I just, like, I've seen this name. I've heard him, you know, this the talk of this name bandied about. He's a hugely successful commercial film director. I just didn't care. It wasn't my thing, right? I needed to examine what was going on with this guy. So I watched Malignant as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's not just the nuttiest hodgepodge,
it is a hot mess.
Yeah, but it's watchable, right?
Oh, listen.
I mean, it's one of those bad movies. Let me ask you. Here's the main question: can't take your eyes off of this movie. It's got some interesting concepts in it. Is it deliberately bad?
I think it's deliberately homage to all the tropes that he could find. He went into the attic, opened up a chest, and took out every possible one. With some interesting side notes. For instance, I can't forget the image of the girl with the monster on the back. This is the one, right?
Yeah.
On the back of her head?
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
You're right. Yeah. But wow. And because there have been more than one, and I'm thinking of the Nighthouse, where this whole idea, the doppelganger idea, like that there's some monstrous other part of you or your husband or something that you don't know. So I think he's dipping into some serious stuff, and I agree with you. Sometimes I just have any idea whether the tongue is in the cheek or not.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the thing that fascinates me most about him is Zack Snyder is terrible with actors, right?
Yeah.
Zack Snyder's a great visualist. Horrible storyteller, and even worse with actors. This guy is—he gets these great actors like Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga,
yes,
you know, in the Conjuring movies, and they are just able to hold it together, it seems. But you know, as soon as it's like almost the camera lingers too long on an actor's face after they've delivered a cheesy line,
okay,
or a terribly written line, and I don't know. That's the question I have. Why isn't he cutting away? Like, if he just cut away a hair sooner, it could save you that awkward, queasy feeling. Right? But he doesn't.
I'd just say he is the first Asian director to have two movies that made over $1 billion. This guy knows something.
I know he does.
And I think that the question that you asked, which is so appropriate for him, is his genius. That he is able to play... just straddle both worlds. For serious guys like us, he makes us question. But for other people, his craft, because I've got a really good quote from him.
Okay.
About Saw, he says, that was part of my aesthetic that I was going for. I wanted to make the film really claustrophobic. And one way I was going to do that was every time we go to a new location, I'm not going to set up using an establishing shot. You don't see a house and then cut to the inside of the house. You cut to inside, to inside, to inside, he said.
Interesting.
This guy is...
Okay, so here's the thing. With Saw, I haven't seen that movie since it came out.
Oh, I haven't either.
It seems so different and light years away from where he ended up. In other words, Saw is this kind of torture porn. There's this grotesque aesthetic about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's grimy and wet and gross, right? He has since you know, the his biggest hits being the Conjuring movies, mm-hmm. I mean horror hits. Obviously Aquaman mm-hmm. and Fast and Furious are different.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to have taken these classic horror tropes and he frames them in this Disney-fied...
Exactly.
This Disney-fied realm.
I was going to say he warms them up.
And that, to me, is why the movies are so successful. Because he's softening... Look, they're effectively creepy. You get the jump scares and all that stuff.
But nothing like Saw.
But yeah, it's not like that. I wonder why he chose to move so far away from that. Because it seems like, you know, thinking back on Saw, like that could be a really creepy, like this guy could take you to really scary places and he doesn't.
Don't you think that he reaches his apex in horror with Saw, that there is no other place for him to go? But if he's really a good filmmaker, if he is dedicated to his craft, then he moves over, I think, to Conjuring. Conjuring is a family film in a way. It's family horror.
Yeah.
It's easy to take.
Right.
And so I think he has made a conscious decision to go that way because I don't think he has any other place to go with Saw.
That's, you know, and that brings me to my other curious, like this other thing I was curious about Wan's films is his use of sets. I don't know. When's the last time you saw Insidious, or have you seen Insidious?
Oh,
it's been a while, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay, Rose Byrne and Patrick Wilson again. Yeah. And their kid goes into this like inexplicable coma.
Right.
And there's some malevolent spirit haunting their house, right? That is shot in a real house. And for me, the first two acts of that film are pretty effective. You know, you get this creepy sense that this stuff is unfolding in a real space.
Hmm.
By the time you get to the Conjuring movies, especially the second one, the houses are so, the interiors are so obviously set.
Well, yeah, they're
you know,
artificial.
He gets these sofas and wallpaper that are supposed to look lived in, but are clearly not lived in. And that's, again, I come back to this question. Does he think we believe that that's dirty wallpaper or these sofas are, you know, beaten down, lived in sofas? Or does he expect us to see the artifice there?
I think partly the latter. For nerds like you who watch that kind of thing, he's pleasing you because he's challenging you, and you're asking that a great question, which I think is answered by his statement. It's the craft that he's interested in, and so whatever he does, you know, here's a guy who doesn't make establishing shots. He sends you right into the place and makes you look at his wallpaper, and so guys like you are intrigued. Other guys who don't pay that much attention, it washes over and it seems real to them. What do they care? They can't wait for the hatchet to come.
It just makes me crazy.
But I think you're not giving them, well, you are, but you're not giving him enough credit.
Okay.
That he has control of every frame of his film.
I know he does. And at this level of, this stage of his career where he's proven that he's a major box office behemoth.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I do wonder what is, you know what I mean? Is this guy just an accident, like a commercial accident? And how much of it is savvy know-how?
I think the latter. I think without question, the guy's brilliant. And knowing what we know about really good directors, there's not a frame that goes out of their control.
Mm.
And so he is going to. Now, I'm thinking, what about, say, like, let's take the classic horror film, Psycho.
Yeah.
Is there any comparison? Can you... I certainly believe that Hitchcock is in control of every frame, right down to water going down a drain.
Right.
He's got it. Do you think this guy shoots with a shotgun?
Okay,
and so he's got the tropes all over the place. But isn't he like Hitchcock in his control? Can't you see him doing the little cartoonish frames?
Well, here's what I think. I think that James Wan is no Hitchcock.
Yeah, well, okay.
You're listening to Double Take, critical, sometimes confrontational, but always amusing conversations about movies. We're talking about James Wan, his newest film, Malignant, which is both in theaters and streaming on HBO Max. I had such a rollicking good time with this movie. mostly because I couldn't believe what I was seeing. So, you know, he opens this movie with that really gothic, over-the-top gothic shot of the, you know, the institution on the hillside at night, right? Then cut.
Which looked like a lot of CGI to me.
Oh, yeah, of course. There's a lot of CGI in this movie. Then you cut to the inside, right? And you get this absolute homage to, like, the 30s kind of, you know, insane asylum, madman kind of situation, right? And then, boom, you're into the credits. You don't know what's going on. You pick up the story. You're with Annabelle Wallace, this, you know, very attractive brunette. She's in an abusive relationship. She's pregnant. And then within the first 10 minutes of the movie, there's an altercation with the husband. The husband is killed by this malevolent figure.
Mm-hmm.
And then she loses the baby.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty intense setup.
I think so.
At a breakneck speed. At B-movie, at that B-movie mm-hmm. pace, which I love.
And let me say as an aside, that opening shot you're talking about had evoked thoughts of Hannibal Lecter to me.
Okay.
The institution.
Yeah. But it's so cartoonish.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's right, too, mm-hmm. at the same time. That's why I think this guy is so good, because it is cartoonish, but it also connects to other serious horror-type films.
Yeah. So, but there's a point at which in the movie he pivots, and I felt like, okay, we're no longer in a horror movie. So the detectives show up, right, to investigate this murder and another murder, and then the girl is seeing the murder. Something happens where she's able to see the murders, and then you see Gabriel, the figure, who I'm assuming, maybe not this year, but certainly next year, people dressed up as Gabriel for Halloween. It's going to happen, and there's going to be a sequel to this movie. He creates this terrific origin story for this character, Gabriel. But anyway, the cops come in, and there's a scene in the middle of the movie. It turns into like an action movie mm-hmm. where the cop is chasing Gabriel down a fire escape,
see,
down the street.
This is definitely tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, because we're all yelling, do not do that.
Right.
Do not rush after him and go into his lair.
Don't go down there.
No, do not do that.
And then the cop chases him into that basement. And And then there are these weird carriages.
Yes.
And these sort of
It's like an old museum, but it's not.
Right, right.
There used to be a line. It used to be some kind of transportation place.
Yeah,
so
okay.
They just have old.
Old like carriages.
Yes, right.
Old horse-drawn hearses and whatnot.
It was great. I loved it.
And it is. See, in those instances, I felt like, okay, he's really embracing the Baroque elements. Is that what you
okay?
Call
that's
it? You
a good
what
word.
I'm saying?
Yeah,
these operatic kind of ridiculous structures
and having fun at the same time.
Yeah, and having fun. It is definitely more fun. I guess I became exasperated with the Conjuring movies, you know, because they're so, I wanted them to be scarier and I wanted them to be, and this is, you know, he's throwing scary out the window and just embracing the absurd.
Oh yeah. And then let me read another quote from him that I think will help, because you're talking about the details of his films and how much is serious, not serious, how much is he dipping into that treasure chest of tropes.
Yeah.
He says, "We think craft is important, and the irony has always been that horror may be disregarded by critics, but often they are the best-made movies you're going to find in terms of craft. You can't scare people if they see the seams." Now, of course, you see the scenes, but you're an unusual.
I see the scenes all over the place.
I know, but you're unusual.
Which is why they're not scary.
I know, but you're an unusual observer.
Okay.
So the rest of the people take it as it is. And he believes he doesn't have any seams. Says you can't scare people if they see the seams. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting. I guess, again, my incredulity at the fact that people can't see these seams.
Well,
I mean, are they that stupid?
Well, no, but they're.
I think
they're interested in being
stupid.
They're interested in being scared.
I want to be scared too.
I know, but nobody looks at a movie the way you do. I mean, you dissect it immediately. You're looking at every. You're looking at the craft.
I guess we end up in that spot then, right? The troubled spot where the critic is vilified because the critic is more keenly aware of these mechanics.
Looking at the really dissecting his craft.
Okay.
And if he were talking with us, he'd be so happy that you did. Now, I think
I would love to interview him.
Yeah. Oh, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
I think he has. I get a feeling of Michael Curtiz. Here's a guy who makes, you can't tell what his thumbprint is. He's made so many different movies. So,
well, see, I think this guy has made mostly horror films. He's only ventured outside of that realm twice.
Yeah, but that's...
And then I bet, because you're operating in that larger framework of a franchise, that he his personal stamp then becomes a little less obvious, you know?
Yeah.
He subsumes... sublimates his personal take to the larger needs of the franchise.
Well,
right?
Well, that's true too. Yeah, but still, I think he's willing to move over there. He could have continued to make Saw-like movies for the rest of his life. It's so iconic.
Yeah, I wonder. I do think he loves the medium. You feel that? That definitely comes through. I feel like he definitely sort of. Enjoys and derives great pleasure from sort of goosing the audience and getting them going.
Yeah.
I just wonder what might happen if James Wan, you know, took a little more care to shape his performances, the performances in his film, and if he could level those skills at something a little more. I don't know. But then I'm asking this guy to do something maybe he doesn't want to do.
That the world will not ask him to do.
Right.
So far, they're rewarding him. He's an Asian director.
Mm-hmm.
He's also Australian.
Okay.
So I'm wondering how that impacts on his work, if it does at all.
Yeah.
I mean, here's a guy definitely with a world vision. He's diminutive, which would be a whole other story. He's 5'1".
Okay,
I'm just throwing it out.
5'1"?
Yeah, wow. I'm throwing it out to say how many of these factors are involved in the richness that you have described, and so that I would go back to Malignant and watch for the. I know I did watch The Wallpaper after you told me about it, and so I'm wondering if it's up to guys like you who really appreciate this to point out these details. Then when we go back to see them and we enjoy the details, we wonder whether his tongue is in his cheek or not. But we have expanded the richness of that film, and he would be very happy because you're looking at his craft, and he says that you can't. It's important. You can't scare people if they see the seams.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. So you watched Malignant?
Yeah, I did.
What was tell me one like scene, the high point of that movie for you?
Oh well, it was the one I alluded to before.
Okay.
When she finally shows her. Her other nature,
okay.
Other side. I thought that was really pretty creative.
You mean when they discover it, when the mom and the sister discover it on videotape?
Whenever we first see it.
Okay.
Because I hadn't been prepared for that at all.
And we first see it when they're watching a VHS tape of her.
Yeah. Okay. And to me, he had made a point so relevant to any human being, which is the other side, our dark side.
Yeah.
You know, and this is here's visible, the dark side. But most of us think, as we see these characters, particularly in horror films, where there's something, some monster lurking, and frequently the monster is inside of you, alien
yeah,
type.
Yeah, and that is a classic trope.
Yes, right.
My favorite scene, I think, in the whole movie is the jail cell scene.
Okay.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, tell me.
She's in the jail cell. She gets arrested.
Oh, where she's got other chicks there?
Yeah.
And oh, yeah. Like, it's just right. Yes.
And it's such a motley crew of like these, and again, this again, they're so obviously fake.
The
types.
One, the lead one, is so cartoonish,
right? And then there's a girl there who looks like she just fell out of a Pam Grier movie in the 70s. It's just this weird.
It is good.
Over the top, these different types, right? And then our heroine. Proceeds to murder each and every one of them.
Yes.
There's like 30 of them in
yes,
there.
Yes, right.
Now that is so...
Does she even get a guard?
Yeah, she pulls the guy through the bars.
It's all absurd.
I know, I love that. And I guess you're right. In that moment, to me, it's so operatically ridiculous
yes.
that you can't help but Love that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what his future is. But, you know, when he's hooked up with the... No, he's done only one Furious, right? Just Furious 7?
Yeah, and then I don't know if he's slated to direct Aquaman 2. Okay. But...
And you're right. The Aquaman is definitely just family fare.
Yeah.
So he gets... It's really pretty cool that he gets a chance to do that after he could have rested on his laurels for Saw. I think Saw is one of the most iconic horror films ever made. Most memorable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his visual images there are so memorable. And I think he picks on something that, for instance, we hate to think about with the Taliban. Actually cutting hands off.
Yeah.
Actually putting you in with a saw that can't cut through your chains.
Yeah.
But can cut through your body parts. Isn't that?
Yeah, that's what I mean. And that, again, back to the original point, which is, you know, he started out with this. And he often takes a lot of, I think people just associate him with that whole franchise.
Yes.
But he only directed the first
movie.
The
first, right.
And then, you know, the 19 films that came after that are not his.
Yeah.
But you're right. He did set that in motion. That,
wow.
That torture porn.
Oh, right.
Subgenre.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, okay. Listen,
James Wan.
You turned me around here.
All right.
No, you did. I do think that there is. You know, I wanted to have this discussion because my head was spinning with this guy, and I think you're right. I think there is just a love and a joy in the mechanics of cinema. I do think, you know, I do think that some of it is fortuitous. I think James Wan. I don't think he can direct an actor. I think that is a glaring flaw. I think it works to his advantage because he operates in this garish, sort of ridiculous vein.
Yeah.
And I think it ends up serving his aesthetic.
Though I think even I, with much less talent than he, could direct Vera Farmiga. I think I could.
I know where you direct her.